me, Bill.
Meow.
Meow. Wow, wow, wow. Welcome. This is the Freedom Fiends, a show for all the late night people who've got hamsters in their brains. Michael Dean is out tonight. He was auditioning for the Rockettes and tore a tendon. So he has to sit this one out, but he will return tomorrow. Tonight with me is Bill. What's going on, Bill?
It is I. I'm so happy and honored to be on there with you, Derek J.
Oh, yeah.
One and only.
Good to be with you. I am your host tonight, Derek J., sitting in for poor Michael Dean, who we hope has a speedy recovery. Now, tonight, Bill, we were riffing a little bit about fashion and the world of mindless consumerism, but I am a fan of fashion. I think it's important to stick with the principles like a rock, but go with fashion like the tide. Now, I bring this up because there's a new trend of men wearing flowers in their beards. This is a real thing. I'm not making this up. Like bouquets of flowers, not just like what you would see with a woman sticking a pretty flower in her hair. Like, this is an entire bouquet. If you can picture a man with a full beard and every square inch of it is covered in a daisy or a rose. And I think this is a good fashion trend that should absolutely continue. But Bill, you think fashion is horrible.
I don't think fashion is horrible at all. You misinterpreted what I said, but I have to address something you're saying about beards. This isn't a new trend, because remember that Blackbeard the pirate, of course, wore firecrackers in his beard.
This is true.
You and I have both seen Pirates of the Caribbean, whether it's the really bad animatronic, really ancient dummies that they have at the Disney World and Disneyland, or the great movies with Johnny Depp, one of my favorite actors, and he wears stuff in his beard too.
Well, so, all pirates wear bugs in their beard. They can't help it.
Well, they all have lice. You're right. There's no doubt.
So I think this is a good trend because it's equality the other way. So often women are looking for equality to match men. But this is going the other way where men are saying, go ahead, sniff my chin. You can smell my bouquet of flowers. And who wouldn't want to pucker up with a lovely young man who's got flowers and a beautiful aroma emanating from his chin?
Well, I think that that's what cologne is for or perfume is for. But
that's,
you know, as far as
purpose.
People wearing what they want to wear, I mean, I have no beef with that whatsoever. You know, like, I love reggae music, but I would never, ever wear my hair with Rasta dreads, because Rasta dreads are nasty. You don't wash your hair. You have winged livestock who nest there.
But that's just your opinion, man. That's just your opinion.
Is.
You know, there's science behind the beard thing, because scientists say that they've done actual studies where men who have beards are more attractive than clean-shaven men. Like, time and time again, they will sit down, women or men, in these studies and say, who's more attractive? Who would you trust more with your life? It's always the guy with the beard. They've got a tale to tell.
You know, not only that, this could very well be the case for several reasons. Number one of which is that the man doesn't have time to stop working to shave. And number two, if you go to the Middle East, women are attracted to fat men. Why are they attracted to fat men?
I don't know.
Because fat men can feed themselves.
Is that really true? I hear that, but I think that's one of those old wives' tales.
It is not an old wives' tale, having been in some of the imperialist mud pits.
So you think attraction works differently for people who are from different cultures? I mean, is the attraction that...
I absolutely do.
Is it that culturally ingrained, or you don't think that your pheromones have more to do with all this?
Oh, I think it could very well. You know what? There's no such thing here as certitude with what exactly causes attraction between people. But here's what we do know anthropologically, is that genetically a woman with larger hips and larger breasts, like Marilyn Monroe, is attractive to a larger universal set of men than a woman who has the opposite traits. And the reason for that is because they know that in childbirth, as we're genetically wired as men, in childbirth, she will stand a better chance of surviving. And with larger breasts, she stands a better chance of allowing the children to survive once she's birthed them.
Wow. So there is science behind what you're saying. You know, there's science behind this, too. Women love flowers. and women love beards. So women should love men with flower beards.
I think that women should love who they choose to love and no one else.
Aw, that's kind of sweet. But you're not you're weaseling out of taking a stance on the hipster beards. Tell me if you're gonna do it.
Come on now, let's not start taking pot shots at each other. Derek, because what you're doing is you're saying that I'm weaseling out of something.
Yeah,
I'm not
take a stand. Don't be a fence sitter.
I love permanent fashion. And I mentioned to you before we started this show, if I dress like a well-dressed or upper caste man did in the 1930s and 40s, today, you and I both, if we dressed that way, we would command the room if we walked into the room.
True.
But if I dressed as the upper caste man or the well-to-do man from the 60s and 70s, I would not command the room. I would be the subject of much derision.
You know, it occurs to me, Bill, you're absolutely right, and it's easier today than ever before to dress that way. I mean, you can find, 20s-style clothing in any, like at a convenience store, a thrift store or something. You can find these stuff anywhere.
And yet people don't own 6 tuxes, Derek.
But people don't dress that way. It's more abnormal now that it's more available. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think it's because people have taken casual to its obvious conclusion, which is that if I show up in a t-shirt and sandals and shorts, that's fine.
Yeah, if I'm technically covered,
for who I am.
Yeah,
if I'm technically covered, but it's not. You know, the tuxedo, for instance, was designed with very specific ideas in mind and what the man was projecting when he wore that. And one thing, he's projecting command. He's projecting detail.
Like, what's
he's
the point of the tails?
A master of detail.
I never really got that. I love the look of a tuxedo, and I agree with you. If a man is going to wear the best possible outfit, like scientifically, there's no question. It's the tuxedo. The best thing that a man could be wearing to look his most attractive, put him in a tuxedo. It doesn't matter who you take off the street. If you put him in a tux, he's going to get that job over anyone else.
And Derek, the reason that V for the tux accents the black and white is because the black and white vividly play off each other. They're very basic colors to the human eye.
Yes.
Everybody recognizes them for what they are. When you see that V forming to the belly button and to the navel, what that's doing is accentuating shoulder width. If you accentuate shoulder width and you diminish waist width, you look like a more fit man. For instance, if I'm wearing a short sleeve shirt and I come up and shake your hand and I have large forearms, you're going to be a bit more intimidated, frightened of me, or maybe even admiring of me because my forearms are larger. Because when your forearms and your hands are larger, that's how we deal with our entire life. That's how we pursue life physically, is with our hands and our forearms. And that strength dictates how we can dominate.
So how often do you work on your forearms?
Do you work them
out so that you can command a room better?
Well, absolutely. Doesn't everybody?
No, I mean, I look to you for these tips, though. I should start working out the forearms.
I urge everybody to use what's called Convict conditioning. They can look it up on the internet, and to use isometric presses, which is using your own body weight. If you want to increase forearm strength and hand strength, you could be a rock climber. I used to be a rock climber. Or you can do fingertip push-ups or what's called a towel hang, which is where you drape a towel. Yeah, you drape a towel over a pull-up bar, and you grab it with your fist, close your fist around it, and you hang for 10 to 60 seconds. 10 seconds be the novice level, 60 seconds being the mastery level. Rinse and repeat 2 or 3 times, and over time, you will have some incredible grip strength and forearm strength.
Are you making this up, or do you know what you're talking about?
I know exactly what I'm talking about because I do it. Now, didn't you see me do the modified clutch flag when we were at Porkfest?
Oh, yes, yes, see? Yes. That's an impressive move.
And I'm an old
describe
guy.
It. Describe that for folks who don't know. What is
the modified clutch flag? Is where there's a vertical pole, and I grab that pole and I wrap my upper body around it, and then my body goes parallel to the ground, straight out from the pole, so perpendicular to the pole but parallel to the ground, so that my feet are quite literally even with the ground, about 4 feet up.
So you're just a mastery of attracting women. You don't need a flower beard. You've got your forearms all worked out. They're huge. You look like Popeye.
No, I inherited that from my father, of course, because he's, we all have our genetic inheritance. My father was always very buff and muscular. So I've got that, but I'm a modestly proportioned man. I'm not a large man. You and I both know each other, and we met at Porkfest and such.
Yeah, you're so about
I'm no
the same
Schwarzenegger
height.
Or Hercules.
Yeah, but you look good. But I want to know why you're so anti-fashion. It sounded like before that you were like, oh, people who follow fashion mindlessly are setting themselves up for failure or something. But I'm saying...
Oh, I absolutely think that fashion is conformity, yes.
Hey, but people who've got nothing else, I mean, fashion's a good thing to cling to, right? I like...
They can cling to it, but doesn't mean that they're not being conformists. That's my point.
Okay, but what about people like... who's the art pop woman whose name she totally escapes me at the moment, but she's this big artist, Lady Gaga. And
Lady Gaga, yeah.
Yeah, she's a big artist who is trying to reverse the pop art thing into... art pop, so it's more.
She probably
like,
designed the costumes for the Hunger Games.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Her costumes look a lot like the costumes from the Hunger Games. It's sort of like fashion forward, like way forward, like 1,000 years forward. She skipped a lot of steps, and I think so. No one, I don't see anyone imitating what Lady Gaga produces. I don't see any of her outlandish costumes hitting the streets. So
when I have the misfortune, Derek, of seeing some of the new stuff that's coming down the runway out of Paris or Europe or whatever corner of the world thinks that they are the fashion center of the universe,
yeah,
I'm just appalled at what I see. I mean, you and I could probably wander down with a wrap of tinfoil, a dead salmon on our heads, and maybe a wounded cat in our arms, and we'd be called fashionable.
No way. It's all about big, flashy, solid colors right now. I think if I'm not too far behind.
Neon green.
That's right. Now, then we're in business.
Yes.
So Thomas Jefferson had some quote that really inspired me about that I sort of started the show with a paraphrase of, where he says, and I don't know the exact quote, but you know, you hold fast to your principles like a rock, but you can go with the tide with fashion. Would you agree with that? You know, you say you're fashion classic, and it's so important to project this image of like, oh, Mr. Traditional, I'm wearing a tux. Wouldn't you ever consider short shorts and a tank top?
Never. And remember, Jefferson said, in matters of style, swim with the current, in matters of principle, stand like a rock.
Aha, that's the one.
That's the one.
Worms.
Annelids.
Oh, well, we've got more with the fiends.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
The Freedom Fiends. We're talking about hipsters wearing flowers in their beards and how fashion can be good and bad. Here's one you've never heard of. You can get your jeans custom ripped by tigers. You gonna do it, Bill?
That's awesome, but I've never paid a lot of money for jeans. I'm not one of those guys who will spend $100 or $150 on jeans.
Oh, it's so worth it, though. It's really about shaping your legs.
What I'll do is I'll go to a consignment store and get it cheaper.
Do you even wear jeans?
You
always wear a tux every day.
Well, not every day. Only when I see you at Porkfest.
I see.
But you know what? When I was at Porkfest, like you, I tried to dress in a way that was decent and acceptable. And classy, thanks to my wife's sartorial splendor.
You want to fit in with the hippies. So there's a bunch of hippies there.
Because I'm a hippie in spirit, but physically I don't resemble a hippie. Nor do you.
No, I don't. But sometimes I like to fake it. I think all it takes is a bandana and
a
couple of days of not shaving. Yeah, there was a loincloth guy there, too. That was a fashion-forward thing. I would like to see more of that, like more of less. Less is more in fashion. And there should be, in my opinion, more... I mean, there's plenty of revealing clothes for ladies. That's nothing new in fashion. But more loincloths, more Speedos. I think this is the way that guys' clothing should be directed.
Yeah, and I think I just go in the opposite direction. We already did that.
We already went
classic
in
the suits and tuxedos and really nice Sea Island cotton shirts.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Nice
that is
Italian wool pants.
Ooh,
and
that is
proper
nice.
Loafers like Allen Edmonds or maybe an expensive Italian loafer.
Well, what I if mean, it there's was high quality? Dressing. Yeah, but what if it was high quality leather or something? You know, what if it was a high quality Italian? I don't know, the special cotton imported, made from goats. I don't know. They
or
have
baboon skin loincloths.
Is it, what's the,
I've heard they're softer.
What sort of material, what's the most unique material that you wear? Do you have do you wear shark or, alligator? Do you have anything made of alligator or snake?
I don't. I guess the most unique material that I would wear is the all the tactical kit that I still own and that
really?
I keep updated. Yeah,
tactical wear is so ugly. Yeah. That's not fashionable at all. It's practical. It serves a good purpose. I can't wear it. I cannot do it.
It's fashionable in one sense because it's a survivability wardrobe. It's a wardrobe that speaks to one thing, and that's making it to the end of the day and maybe going through the next day and making it out alive.
Yeah, you'll be the hit of the gun show.
Well, there's this company called Katanica, just like it sounds. And they make terrific clothing, but for instance, pants from Katanica are like $200.
Everyone's trying to get me on that too. They're saying I should wear 5'11" pants because they're so tactical.
Sucks.
Oh, okay.
Sucks.
Well, you could say that, but I disagree. I agree. They look like tactically very efficient type of
wear. But they're very poorly manufactured.
They look so ugly. I can't.
Vertex and Katanica.
So we need to find that perfect marriage of, you know, tactical and, you know, appearance, like the tuxedo meets the 5'11 gear. There's got to be some happy medium.
You're right. And of course, where does all this go? It goes back to England because that's where all the classy clothing in the Western world started, evolved, and kept on evolving to a very fine
level of sophistication. Isn't that Italy where all the fashion and refinement came from? Milan and Paris. I'll bet it did.
I'll bet there was plenty of refinement coming out of Paris. But when it came to, you were just talking about being tactically fashionable. Remember that men went to war up through World War II in ties.
That's right.
1916,
how interesting.
1918.
Now, what would be the purpose of a tie in war? You don't want to be wearing a tie. Someone could grab you and just swing you around.
What did we see, though, during the Great Depression, Derek, where you had men standing in soup lines wearing fedoras, coats, and ties?
Yeah, and see, I don't get why those things are now more available and cheaper than they were then. So why aren't people wearing them? Is it just laziness? They don't care about their appearance?
Oh, I think you hit it on the mark, Derek.
Because
they're lazy. And they don't have a high expectation of what their self-respect is. I make a distinction between self-respect and self-esteem because self-esteem is something that people project onto you that you should have. Self-respect can only come within you as an individual.
Wow. So let's make it a goal to inspire more self-respect in everyone we meet because it has the fringe benefit of making them appear nicer. We get to enjoy their appearance better. Well, I'm not going to get the ripped tiger jeans. I don't think I can afford them. And they rip in all the wrong places. Worms. The Fiends will be back after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
pie shape or sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $5 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Worms. Welcome back, Bill. We are talking about dancing hippies and crown beards fashion. I'd like to take this another direction. Helping the homeless. There was an awesome article that I read about an idea that some activists had for giving the homeless free housing. Okay, we've heard this idea before, but this one's new. This is housing inside of billboards. They're called Billboard Homes. It's a new project by Project Gregory, and it plans to bring advertisers and homeless people together in a mutually beneficial arrangement. And the idea behind the program is the activists will rent out a certain plot of land, set up a billboard house, and that will eventually be used to shelter people without homes. And the billboard house is basically a well-equipped mobile home with a giant billboard on the side of it. So you can picture just a trailer on the side of the road that's raised up a bit, and it's got a stairway up to the top. It's lit. There's a bathroom in there, a bed, a desk, all the things you would basically need to have a place to crash. So what do you think about this idea? We're going to make it happen, Bill?
I love the idea of the free market helping those people who can't have a home by asking them to do something as simple as living in a place that's actually a billboard. You know, and what you've done is you've scratched at the surface of an emerging movement that's in the U.S., and you can find it on tinyhouseblog.com. I watched a documentary several weeks ago about this guy who built a house that had literally less than 300 square feet. And he's part of a subculture movement in the United States where people are starting to live in stuff as small as 80 square feet, and that's the size of their homes. They want to minimize their footprint. They may be doing it for environmentalist reasons. They may be doing it for philosophical reasons, whatever the case may be. This whole notion that we have to live in 3,000 to 5,000 square foot mega mansions is absurd. So the ideas you just talked about, where a guy's living in a trailer, let's suppose it's 10 by 12 or maybe 8 by 12, which would be 96 square feet. That's perfectly feasible for a single person or even a couple to live in comfortably if they designed it well enough. And here, if a billboard company says, hey, not only do we want to advertise our products because under capitalism and the free market, we want to use persuasion and cooperation to form society instead of violence. But in addition to that, we're going to do a service to the community by providing a roof over someone's head who doesn't have it. I'm all for it.
But shouldn't it be a given that over time, if you're an adult, you want your house to be bigger? I always want to move into a bigger house. I don't want to downsize.
I mean, that's an anticipation that I think people are programmed for. We've reduced consecutively in the three houses that we've lived in because I've liquidated all my U.S. real estate, so now I'm a renter. We went from 6,000 square feet to 3,000 square feet, and now we're in 2,000.
Yeah, but it seems backwards to go smaller. Like, when you're a kid, you're small, so the whole world is big. The house is big.
The thing is, though, Derek, you and I are forward-thinking, and people think we're going backwards, but we actually represent the future.
Going smaller is the future?
That's what Schumpeter would tell us, yes.
Well, I'm not so sure. I want a big house, and I feel like robots could make it happen. I mean, this is a good idea. I'm happy for the homeless people, but it should be a stepping stone. We don't want to aim to be in homeless trailers. We don't want to aim for that.
But here's the thing. If you want to live in a tiny house, less than 200 square feet, or you want to live in a mansion that's 10,000 square feet, the society that you and I envision is one in which people not only have that choice, but they make that choice.
Yeah. Well, I
and
would
they do
want
it
to have...
not on the backs of others, but on the sweat of their own brow.
Right. And I would pay my robot maid very well. So, this, you know, you'd pay...
That's so humane of you.
Well, you only pay for it once. Like, they already have Roombas and things that take care of big properties. So, why should people want to live in smaller homes?
But that's up to them, because that's what that's why we're free moral
just
agents.
So that they don't have to walk around as much? It's just a personal preference thing? I get that. But it
maybe
just seems
what they
like,
say, though, is that it takes up less of the sky so that they can step outside and have a... reason to enjoy being outside more than they would if they had a large house.
That's kind of nice. I support that.
Yeah.
So the article about this says that the fees earned through the advertising revenue would pay for the construction of the house, this billboard house, and it would pay for the rent and utilities. So while there's money being exchanged, Project Gregory is a nonprofit effort where multiple parties will trade their skills and property to make a difference in their community. This seems like an idea that could work pretty much anywhere. I don't see any restriction on location for this. Anywhere you can have a billboard, you could have this tiny home billboard.
Derek, I love the idea. And like you and I were saying off air before the show, for the show prep, you know, we're pro-life and pro-love, and that's exactly what this provides.
You're not concerned that this is going to create some sort of homeless ghetto where, you know, the people who live in billboards are known, you know, I don't know, it might be bad to have a homeless billboard sign. What if people start to hate it and say
only
oh, you're
if
one
the
of those...
state gets involved will it become hateful?
Well, I don't know. I could see someone having like an Apple or whoever's advertising would start to get hate mail of like, hey, well, you're giving people these tiny homes, they don't even have clean water, clean facilities, or the, you know, they will have some kind of complaints. How would you respond to someone's complaints about the free market solution for homelessness?
Well, I think that my response will always be the same one, which is that the cost to my freedom and liberty and my ability to be a volitional free moral agent of having the state come in the tiniest manner is far too much for me to bear. And I would gladly suffer the slings and arrows that come with the dangers of freedom than the kind of peaceful servitude that the statist envisioned.
Ooh, I like that. Hey, what about you? Do you prefer a tiny home?
You know, we've moved down because we plan on the possibility of expatting in the future. So we're trying to reduce our material possessions. So by reducing the footprint to a smaller and smaller level, it really forces us to reevaluate all the stuff that we own.
Have you thrown anything away that you thought you'd never would? Or like a bachelor pad stuff that you've kept with you for years and years?
Well, my books. My books are like my children. And I had a library annex on my house, the one that I just sold.
No!
I've always owned a lot of books.
You can't throw away your books!
Well, I didn't throw them away. I gave them away because I can't bear to put them in a dumpster. Unless they're anything that's written by Robert Reich or John Maynard Keynes, then I gladly do that.
Would you consider like a funeral pyre book burning, like a happy book burning, one that you're saying, I'm getting rid of this stuff and it's going up to the sky now?
No, I wouldn't, unless, of course, it was all the monetarists and the Keynesians and the Marxist economists.
That's not a happy book burning. That would be totally intentional.
It would be.
So this idea just takes a few creative people working together. I would love to see something like this develop in my community. I will be asking about what sort of requirements are needed to get a property and see who's interested. I mean, how many people could it take to build a tiny home? Like a handful? Maybe three?
Well, as a matter of fact,
five?
If you watch there on Netflix, I think there's a documentary available that's like an hour long that's really well crafted on tiny houses. And it took this guy almost... I think 14 months to build it, and it had a footprint of less than 300 square feet.
I wonder, though, if this is just a phenomenon that develops out of people being poorer, like a down economy. If the economy were great, houses would be getting bigger and bigger, wouldn't they?
I do think that's a factor, but I also hail from the Stuart Brand side of political philosophy. He's a guy who came out with the Whole Earth Catalog and later the Coevolution Quarterly, which turned into the Whole Earth Review. And there was a curious amalgam, a curious combination of like hippie ambitions, technological savvy, and a will to do right by the environment, but not the way environmentalists want to do it with the government, but by the way that John McPhee and Edward Abbey would appreciate, where they say that, you know, we should be kind to the environment and good conservators because it's a moral thing to do as long as we're not telling other people what to do.
Yeah, that was sort of a hippie idea that came out of like the 70s, and how to make your own solar panels and how to have your own water heater from the sun, and
exactly.
how to cook hot dogs with aluminum foil, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well,
so there have been up times and down times in the economy since then, but that idea still pervades of treating the environment well.
Even when you look at the Amish and Mennonite communities, who provide a very valuable exemplar for us as libertarians and abolitionists to look at lifestyle and see what they do, you may not appreciate their religionist sentiments, but for instance, a bachelor Amish man has a rather modest house. But once he gets married and moves into his house, there's an expectation for three or four generations to live in that house. So the house is bigger because of that.
So do they just swap houses? Like, oh, I'm married now, so you can have my bachelor pad.
It's an interesting ecosystem, because what will happen is that fourth generation, that grandfather or great-grandfather, let's suppose he becomes a widower or he only has his wife left, they move into the smaller house the bachelor was in. The bachelor goes to the larger home to sponsor his family.
Wow. So do they ever reuse the wood from their houses? If they're into this...
Well, they absolutely do. I mean, I was just joking.
You're for real?
Amazing. Yes.
They reuse the wood that they built a house with already. They take it apart and build another house. These aren't Lincoln logs.
Or they'll build stuff for tourists, or they'll use it as firewood, but they recycle it in some sensible fashion. But see, they embrace the recycling that Derek Jay and Bill Buport would, which is that recycling is only economically rational if they pay you to do it.
Well, who's paying them?
They're paying themselves by reusing what they have.
Oh, fair enough.
And no one's forcing them to do it.
Okay, so can I pay one of these Amish people to build my next house?
I think you could pay them to build some furniture, but paying them to build your house, I don't know. But find an Amish or Mennonite contractor and see what you think.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like the ideal house of the future. Get the Amish to do it. They've been doing it for a long time. They know what they're doing. If they can take down a house and rebuild one with it, with the wood they've used, then I think we're in good shape.
Especially, and they have these community barn raisings, too, where they just all get together and help someone build their barn.
Yeah, I like that community aspect of the way they work together, they play together. I don't know. So what's is it all Christian, or is it some weird other branch of Christianity that these people ascribe to?
It's all Christian, and of course you'll have people who will say, I'm not a religionist, I'm an observer. But you have the Catholic Church, and then you have the Protestants, and in the Protestants, just like with Islam, you have subsects that are everywhere. You can consider the Amish and the Mennonites to be a subsect thereof, and they live by what's called Ordnungs. They refer to you and I as the English, Derek.
We're the English?
We're the English.
That must make them the Germans. Worms.
Annelids.
The Freedom Fiends will return.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
This is the Central Scrutinizer.
I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to
torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Yeah. Homeless living in billboards. Bill thinks this is a good idea.
I do indeed.
Thinks it's a solution from the free market. No one's going to have a problem with that. Nope. Homeless living in billboards. You don't think they're going to trash them?
Oh, of course they will. The usual suspects from the collectivist pus-sucking left will.
I see. Well, I'm concerned about the homeless myself. I have a heart. like you were talking about love. You want love and friendliness. Well,
Ron Paul wants peace on earth. Really?
Well, what about these child migrants? I read an interesting article recently in Mother Jones about how child migrants have been coming to America alone since Ellis Island. This I was not aware of. I mean, I've seen in the pictures, yeah, there's some kids in the pictures, but I didn't realize they were coming over alone. This apparently has been happening for a long time, and the officials at Ellis Island didn't just send them packing. In fact, the first immigrant to come over through Ellis Island was a 15-year-old girl named Annie Moore. And what did they do? Did they send her back to Ireland? Nope. On January 1st, 1892, they gave her a certificate awarding her for being the first immigrant to walk off the gangplank and handed her a $10 gold coin for being the first person to register. So I don't see that sort of treatment today, and I'm wondering if you can explain what happened.
You know, I can't really explain what happened because I don't know too much about it. I just know that the peak year of European immigration in the U.S. was 1907. 1.3 million immigrants came over. And by 1910, I think there were like 13 million immigrants living in the United States. But then, of course, between 1918 and 1945, you had a huge number of European immigrants who were escaping the European conflicts, both extant, pre-existing, and existing during World War II, the war to save Joseph Stalin. As far as children, I wasn't aware of what you were saying as far as unaccompanied children coming over here and doing that. But then again, we have to remember that in the 19th century, it wasn't uncommon for child marriages at 13 and 14 to be pretty common in the West, even, you know, in the Eastern Seaboard. And in the 18th century, people were getting married between the ages of 13 and 15.
Well, that's how young some of these children were who are passing through. And officials who are reporting here say that it was millions of children who passed through the doors unaccompanied by any family member to help them along. There's now a statue of Annie on Ellis Island. So if you don't believe that 15-year-old girls were traveling with their younger siblings across the waters to America for more freedom, you can go check Ellis Island for yourself, see her statue. And the article also notes that, of course, not everyone was lining up to give Annie and her fellow passengers a warm welcome. There were alarmists, Bill. Alarmists painted immigrants, children included, as disease-ridden job stealers bent on destroying the American way of life.
And this was 120 years ago
when
they were talking like that, and they were referred to then as nativists.
Well, it seems like history is repeating itself. I'm hearing Michelle Bachmann used the word invaders recently when describing the children who are coming across from Mexico. And that's a shame. You know, I would like to have the same sympathy for these immigrants. For, you know, my grandparents were immigrants. I don't know if they came over as children or not. But
my grandmother was German. So, well, yeah.
So it wasn't Stephen Colbert. Who's the other one? Jon Stewart made an excellent point on this in a comedy piece that he made recently, explaining that America's a nation of immigrants who's constantly hating the newer immigrants, just like whoever the newest ones are. It's like, we got here, so you can't. Now you're out. It used to be children coming over on their own, and you mentioned the year 1907. That's an interesting fact. You said that was the biggest year for immigration.
For European immigration.
Well, did you know that there was also a government law passed called the Immigration Act of 1907, declaring that unaccompanied children under 16 were not permitted to enter in their normal fashion? I want to talk more about this when we come back. Worms.
Annelids. We'll be right back.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Are much more convincing.
I've had more practice. Welcome back. This is the Freedom Fiends. Here with me, Bill Bupert. And I'm your host, Derek J. We're filling in for Michael tonight. Can't be with us. But we're talking about the homeless, and we're carrying on just fine without him.
Didn't Michael injure himself in a tussle with a homeless person?
Yes, I think that's what happened. He had his face bitten off by a homeless man, and he's recovering right now. So
I think that the homeless man had been imbibing in soap suds or something.
Something like that. We're not quite sure, but we'll get him
he's
back
recovering,
as soon as
though,
possible.
I heard.
Yeah, yeah. He's soaking his feet or something. So we're talking about child immigrants to Ellis Island, and this is a history that I had never heard before. You know, I always heard Ellis Island, this is where all the immigrants came from, this is where my ancestors came from. But millions of migrants came through Ellis Island as children, unaccompanied by adults, perhaps carrying diseases, as some critics were saying, and looking to steal American jobs.
Of course.
I think that's what they did. They did take a lot of jobs that I guess other people didn't want.
Let's keep something in mind, though. It's only possible to steal jobs in the zero-sum solution set that's set up by Mussolini-style state corporatism in a collective framework that is what the United States is. In a free market, that wouldn't happen.
Well, wait a minute. If there's only two jobs available and this child can underbid me because he doesn't have a family to feed, well, then he's stealing my job.
Well, let's keep in mind that 4-6% of all people who make a salary in the United States make minimum wage. The other 90% plus make more than minimum wage. Why do young people make minimum wage? Because they're low skill, low information, early entry workers, and they don't have a lot to bring to the table. Whereas if one invests decades of time in perfecting a skill, whether white collar or blue collar, you're going to demand a higher currency.
Yeah, one of the things that happened, and I didn't know this, but there were people who used to sponsor the children who were on their way into the Americas. You know, as I mentioned, the Immigration Act of 1907, it made it illegal for unaccompanied children under 16 to enter the country with through the normal process. But they didn't send them packing either. Instead, the act set up a system in which unaccompanied children, many of whom were orphans, were kept in detention, awaiting a special inquiry with immigration inspectors to determine their fate. That sounds scarier than anything else. They'd be under detention at Ellis Island. It's terrifying.
It is, and I'm not familiar with that particular history, so I can't speak with the alacrity that you can to it. But remember, indentured servitude had been here in the Americas since the 17th century, where you'd come over for 8 to 14 years to sponsor your voyage across, and you'd be an apprentice to somebody, or you would be in their employ for that time, and they would wear you out like a rental car.
Wow, but you could still work afterwards. You wouldn't be...
Once you were released, if you survived the indentured servitude.
Wow. Well,
because unlike chattel slavery, where they own you for life to include your progeny that you produce, slave families, chattel slavery families like the blacks in the South, with indentured servitude, they only have you for a period of time, and then you are released after that time because your contract's up, and they can kick you to the curb.
Oh, man. This article from Mother Jones says that at the hearings with the immigration inspectors, local missionaries, synagogues, immigrant aid societies, and private citizens would often step in and offer to take guardianship of the child. This is a great solution. This is something that could happen today. I guess there just aren't the resources to do it. The synagogues, the missionaries aren't asking for guardianship of the children, or would they even be allowed?
Well, you know, one thing that concerns me about all these kind of conversations, and I know that it seems as if I'm a broken record where I say, well, the government's to blame, the state's to blame. I'm not saying that this free market libertarian paradise society that you and I envision is not going to be rife with failures and injury and bad things happening to good people. I'm not saying that at all. But what's going to happen is so many more opportunities will open up. For instance, if the government didn't have its claws in the adoption business and in the knickers in the U.S., so many children would be adopted into homes so fast. But right now, they can wait 6 to 10 years to be adopted into a family because of the bureaucracy. It's just awful.
It's kind of weird. It seems like there was plenty of bureaucracy back then, too, because, you know, a lot of these children were escaping Germany, or they had... Jewish ancestry, and they were killed in Russian pogroms, or their parents were killed, and then they're left, you know, completely abandoned. They end up here on the shore, and it says that the Immigrant Aid Society often obtained bonds to sponsor the immigration. So what is that? The private charity organizations are saying, oh, we want to help this kid out, and you have to pay the state money to help a child? I mean, why can't they just hand over the kid without the money?
It's crazy, but of course you would have Italian people in America looking out for Italian orphans, and you would have German people in America looking out for German orphans. I mean,
that's racist.
It's a human trait to do that kind of thing.
You don't think that's racist?
I don't think it's racist at all. I think it's what they know.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. You know, I know my grandparents came from an Italian neighborhood and a Polish neighborhood in Philadelphia, and it was very taboo to mix, that it was not okay for them to be dating, for them to see each other. Now, of course, it's okay in 2014 America, but back in, I guess, even as early as the Depression days, that was it was still common to stay within your ancestral group. Let's say.
They referred to blacks and whites crossing the love line, as it were, and getting married together to be a form of miscegenation.
That was illegal.
Yeah, it was illegal. Well, in certain states it was, yeah.
Well, I think this is kind of cool because it's such a different message from the one I'm hearing today about all these children coming up. Here, it says in the article that around 1900... a playground was constructed there on Ellis Island with a sandbox, swings, and slides.
I hope there weren't any cats there.
Probably no cats. But a group of about a dozen women known as matrons played games and sang songs with the children, many of whom they couldn't even communicate with due to the language barriers. And then the Red Cross created a schoolroom for them and supplied them with a radio for the kids to listen to. This is a totally different attitude towards immigration than the one I see today. And you think the difference? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what is the difference. One of the things I can speculate on was that the economy was better, that there were more jobs available. So even though they were taking jobs, you know, it wasn't as much of a problem. There was still...
You know, there's a number of explanations here, as there is with any complex subject, which is what we're dealing with. And one of the things then is that the technical accountancy standards, the taxing standards, and the ability of the bureaucracy to get its arms around an entire population, you could actually get lost then. You could actually become invisible. You could actually go to another state in the United States and flee a bad life. You could flee an arrest warrant. You could,
wow.
And you could get away with it. You can't do that today.
Yeah. And you're not really getting away. Well, I guess depending on what the crime was, you're not getting away with anything. But
yeah.
Wow. To imagine a time when you could get lost in government paperwork and truly be lost.
Can you imagine that, to become an official displaced person? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it ironic that as libertarians, we wish to be displaced persons?
And isn't that the goal of all expats anyway? Don't they want to escape somehow?
It is.
They
indeed
want to be forgotten.
That's a brilliant connection. But of course, even if my wife and I do expat, and we do have plans to do that eventually, unless I renounce my U.S. citizenship, the IRS will have its tentacles firmly embedded in every orifice I own until I do that.
Oh, uh-oh. Well, I don't know about that. Is there any way to erase your government papers? I mean, isn't that a bad idea? You'll never be allowed back.
Oh, you would be allowed back, because how many people come here either on a green card or an H-1B visa or just on a visiting visa? Plenty of people do who aren't U.S. citizens. I have a daughter-in-law who is a citizen of another country, and I've urged my son not to get her U.S. citizenship for this very reason, because he has a great trump card to play, which is that if he does wish to renounce his U.S. citizenship, which will cost you $540, by the way.
It costs you money to renounce your citizenship?
Yes, it does. Isn't
Why?
That astonishing?
Yeah.
Of course it does.
Is it a fine?
Because the U.S. government wants to, It is. I think it's predatory when they do that. But that's what the USSA has become. It's become a predatory nation. We live in vampire nation, Derek.
Well, I don't know. Do you think it's really cost prohibitive? It's in the hundreds, not the thousands. So at least.
Well, I don't think it's cost prohibitive, but it really is a slap in the face. But then again, to renounce U.S. citizenship, you can't do it if you're stateless. You have to do it by having made arrangements for a passport to do that. And like Jeff Berwick's Dollar Vigilante and a number of other organizations out there in the liberty realm help to facilitate those kind of transactions. Like, I think you can get a passport, you can purchase one in Cambodia for $80,000. St. Kitts and Nevis, it's $250,000. Paraguay, after 28 months and paying about $10,000 in legal fees, you can get Paraguayan citizenship. So this way you have a place to land. But you have to be rather well off, like Doug Casey and the rest of these guys who have these villas down in Argentina or parts of South America, and they have an income stream that is independent of being a U.S. citizen.
Wow, you really have looked into this. I heard you could get a passport with Bitcoin. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely, you could.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that that's not in the U.S., though. It's from some random weird country.
No, I don't think it would be a random weird country. I think that most of them would, because, of course, think of it this way, Derek. If you did want to do it with Bitcoin, you could certainly find somebody to facilitate that transaction for a VIG.
For a
where they get a piece for a VIG, a piece of the action.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a term I'm not familiar with. I get it now, though.
It's a Las Vegas term.
Right.
For casinos, yeah. Where they get their piece of the action.
So when you travel all around the world, are you are you looking at places that you might consider as you're traveling? You're like, oh, I could live here. I could check out some mountains.
I've been to a lot of third world and developing countries. We were just in the Philippines in January on a scouting expedition there to see how that would be. And it has its problems. And then this fall and winter, we plan on going down to South America to explore some of those environs and see where we can land.
Oh, that sounds so scary.
It's
undeveloped
not scary.
Territories.
Oh, you've
there
got
are to, mosquitoes got there.
If there's any message for the audience, travel. Leave the country and you'll see the U.S. is not number one.
Not number one in many things. But number one in some things. We can celebrate that.
Tyranny.
Number one in tyranny. Number one in freedom fiends. And the freedom fiends will be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Love the fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. download, and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock. Wild world of hippie homes and government drones. This is the Freedom Fiends. Welcome back. Hey, Bill.
Hey.
You know, I can't make heads or tails of this child immigrant stuff. It just seems like we should follow the golden rule. That's my resort to when I don't know what to do. Just follow the golden rule. That's all there is.
Splendid. That's what we should do. And as it's just like when we had the abortion clinic, you know, what we were probably trying to state the most of all was that we are pro-life. And that's what we should always press as the clarion call of the abolitionist movement, is that we're pro-life and we are not the death cult that the government is.
Well, I think Jesus was known for saying, I can feed bread and water and wine to 2,000 people, but these child immigrants, they're undocumented. I just can't handle that. I'm not going to feed them.
That's just ridiculous.
That's what Jesus said. It's a direct quote from the Bible. So I'm curious also, you know, just changing gears slightly a bit. I'm looking for a perfect mate, you know, someone for life that will be my partner forever. And in my quest, you know, I've used all sorts of online dating sites, and I look to you as sort of a specialist in this area. You're a master at attracting all sorts of people. And there's this new service that allows for mates to be matched using biological compatibility. It's not what you think. They send saliva samples to a lab, and they test for two key genetic markers, whether or not the person has a strong sense of, like, a strong immune system, and whether or not their serotonin uptake controller is, how that works. And they match people who have different ones, because scientists say the people who get happier for different reasons, they're a good match. Now, this, I don't know if they're true or not. I don't know if that's right. But that's what the scientists are saying. And I'm excited about entering a new realm of DNA compatibility. I'm wondering if you have any insights on this. Is this a good way for me to find a mate?
But, you know, I wonder to myself, the Down syndrome people that I know are some of the most loving people I've ever known in my life. Unconditionally.
Yes.
And they probably meet both of those genetic markers that you've just described. So you could get set up with somebody who has Down syndrome, who would be a loving partner but may not fulfill other things. And I think that's one of the shortfalls of trying to scientifically assess this kind of thing. Because one thing that modern science does very poorly is use empiricism. I think for the most part, causation is very hard to establish. And it takes a higher bar of evidence and far greater evidence to have any certitude about it. Correlation's real easy. I can easily tell you that 92% of all the people who have ever been to the federal penitentiary have drank milk at one time or another.
Yeah, so it's
that
probably the
is
milk.
A correlation.
Yeah, it's probably that's what's in the doing milk. It.
That's what's doing it. But as you know, look at it this way. I don't think I'm fond of that particular model being used to find a mate. But I think people should take advantage of the internet and all of these new solution sets that are available to find a mate. Because look at it this way. 50 years ago, or let's say 20 years ago before the internet, the ability to find a mate was basically you were a ball in a pinball machine. You were relying on pure, dumb, blind luck to run into the right person at the right place, even though people tend to frequent the wrong places to find the right person.
Yeah, as hard as it is to find a mate now, I would much rather be doing that job today than 100 years ago, when it was totally random chance. You pretty much had to find someone who you were in the same proximity as. There's no way to reach out across the internet to find people of similar beliefs. And then you could just move. If I found my one perfect mate in Japan, I could just go to Japan. But there's no chance of that happening 100 years ago.
That's right. But now what you could do is you could say, hey, I want he or she to be a libertarian. I want them to be a gun nut. I want them to have the following fanaticism about hiking, camping, and rock climbing. Do they love American Ninja Warrior? Do they like to work out? Are they physically fit? Are they between 5'9" and 5'11"? And do they weigh the following amount of kilograms? And are they lithe? Are they are they fit? Are they muscular? Or are they fat? Or whatever the case may be. You can pick those things in a menu now.
That's scary.
And then you can meet them for coffee. And you can find out whether you're compatible or not. You couldn't do that 20 years ago. So I think the internet can be employed, or you know, whatever medium you want to use to select a mate can be employed, so you can apply some deliberate planning to it instead of being a pinball.
That scares me. You know why? It's more options. That's great. But I'm afraid that someone's going to choose to reject me because of something weird like, oh, just an inch too short. I can find a million others just like you. We'll be back on
You
the
deserve
Freedom
better.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
From an overground bunker. Welcome. I'm Derek J. I'm with Bill.
That's me.
Meow. And Michael Dean can't be with us tonight because he is watching Mad Max with a cat on his lap.
I thought he had ovarian cancer. Is that what you said earlier?
He's recovered, and now he's okay. In his...
Did he recover this evening?
Yes, he's on the gurney, and he's watching Mad Max with a cat on his lap. And for some reason, he says, this movie is heavily seeded by people in Brazil. Go figure.
I personally like that movie a lot. And I'd recommended it to him. Road Warrior is a bit better, but Mad Max is a good prequel to Road Warrior.
Are you afraid of a Mad Max scenario? Do you think this is a real vision of anarchy?
No, I think we live there.
Oh, my.
I think okay. This is it. Yeah.
Wow.
This is
it. All right. Well, I have to check it out. It's one I haven't seen myself.
Because
but...
a world of no state is going to be a world much better than we live in now.
Fair enough. I believe that, but I'll have to... watch the movie to catch the reference. It's like 100 years old, isn't it? That movie is
78 or 79. But remember that democracy is voting to put the worst people in charge to protect you from a few bad people you're afraid of.
That's right. That's what democracy is about. That's why I'm afraid of democracy. But I'm not afraid
like
of this. You mentioned that my future lovers could just reject me because I'm just a centimeter too tall or too short, or...
But if they're that shallow, you don't want them in the first place.
Okay, fair enough. But with they've got all the options in the world, they can just choose the perfect person for them. They could create a robot that's perfect for them. But I want to tell you about this test, because I'm seriously considering this. I might lay down some money for this test. The tests referenced on the website, this from the Daily Mail article, include an experiment at a Swiss university where males were asked to wear the same T-shirt for two consecutive nights. That's not the test. Women who had never met any of the men then smelled each T-shirt. That's the test. Then they rated the odors from the most pleasant to the least pleasant. And the study revealed that the women rated the most pleasant odors, or pheromones, as coming from the shirts worn by the men with the human leukocyte antigen gene. It's the one that was most opposite to their own. So the genes that are most opposite to them, it's sort of like an opposites attract sort of thing. This is a science-based, experiment-based research study that determines opposites attract.
That drives me barking mad, Derek, because that is correlative conclusion, not causation.
Oh, okay, like that's what you explained
that is
earlier.
Is correlative. Yes.
Okay, well, it seems to add up. It seems to make sense to me. I'm just an amateur, reading articles on the internet.
Look, so. I'm a scientific observer. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. I leave that up to my son. But what you discover with global warming and global change and global cooling, whatever the case they call it, if you have three or more variables in an empirical problem, and that empirical problem happens to be the global weather system, there is no way with our present empiricism and cognitive abilities that anybody can show me the causation with any certitude that this anthropogenic global endeavor causes this to happen in the weather system. It's impossible for them to assign that, but they can do it with correlation. Correlation is the poor man and the non-thinking man's solution to scientific problems.
I agree with you, but that doesn't help me get a date.
This is trial by error. If you go out with 200 of them, you'll find somebody.
Okay, fair enough, but I want
to. It doesn't mean that
edge.
You have to sleep with them. It simply means that you can go out for a coffee or go out for a hard cider or something like that and get
I'm
to know them.
It.
And then if you don't like them, tell them to go away.
I'm
just
for
go
it, but away. I want to increase my chances here, and I want to use science to do it, because I can't tell you how many dates I've been on with guys or whoever I met online that all of our personality stuff matches. And, on paper, we would be a perfect match. But then the chemistry is just not there. And chemistry is just something you can't account for online. But this is one way that you can. You can do a gene-based test and find whether or not the chemistry is going to match up.
I don't see the efficacy of it, frankly, with those two markers, because human beings are much more sophisticated than those two markers of millions of things that make us the unique individuals that we are.
Right. Well, there's other stuff, but I know of no other way to test for this aside from asking my potential date to send a sweaty old T-shirt
but what if you're a neat Nick and he's a slob? What if this is the Odd Couple, where it's from that old TV series from the 70s where they might have met the genetic markers, but they hate the way each other lives.
I have an idea. So this should be integrated with Facebook or I think it's already integrated with LinkedIn or as any social networking. This should be integrated with all of them so that you get a full profile of the person, a potential mate. You can see what sort of things are into, because there's already like OkCupid or a few of these dating sites that try and do some analytics that are science based. So you partner that with the genetic stuff, and now you've got all the best of all worlds. You can use all of these factors to find the perfect mate.
I agree.
And they can be around the world.
As long as you use more than two genetic factors, Derek, I'm behind you. But in the end, what I want to do is I want Derek J to find happiness. And if you find that with a partner, great.
Well, how do you do it? You just say it's a numbers game? You go on a lot of dates?
No, you know what? I don't think so. For me, because I'm so bloody old, I met my wife in the 90s. We've been together for almost a quarter century now.
Wow.
And we met through the newspaper classified ads.
No way.
We did. As a matter of fact, our
That's
very
a real
first
thing.
Date was televised on a local news station in Nashville, Tennessee.
What, were you on the dating game?
It was not the dating game, but they were doing a story on how people meet in the classifieds, and Lilo happened to be one of the people they interviewed, and she said, well, I'll see if I can arrange a date with somebody. She arranged a date with me, and they televised our date.
So this is something I've only heard reference to in the Jimmy Buffett song, If You Like Pina Coladas, or whatever that song is. You know, they find each other in this in the classifieds. I thought that was made up. Yeah. People really
not made up at
use
all.
It. It's, yeah. And there were codes. What was your classified ad? Do you remember?
It read, three redheads, one short, one tall, one not tall at all, and one not too tall, looking for a classy man who likes the following things, and it evades me what it is, but I seem to fit the bill. Plus, I thought, you know, three strikes and I'm out. At least I have a broader chance. And I'm a redhead aficionado. So I hit the mark, and we went on a date, and the rest is
wait, that's
is,
her ad.
History.
That's her ad. What was your ad?
Oh, I didn't have one.
Oh, so you were seeking. You just found
I was
it.
A consumer.
You were like, okay, I could fit this bill. Let me try. And
you
so you went on a date,
there's
and
there's all kinds of alternative weeklies everywhere.
So what did you propose as your first date? Because this stuff still exists. You can look in the classifieds, still find this.
Well, we went
I mean,
to a
plus
great
it's online.
Went to a great restaurant together, and we met there. You know, because you always want to meet in a public place because you never know what kind of whack jobs would respond to the ads.
Good advice.
And that's the way she looked at it. But, you know, we have five children between us.
Wow. So, congratulations. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Well, yeah, it's been tempestuous because redheads are psychologically and physiologically different from the rest of humanity, but it's worth the effort.
Did you know what you were getting into?
I sort of knew because I dated redheads before, but she's probably one of the most powerful women I've ever known, and that I'm really attracted to women who are smart, powerful, and can give me a hard time on occasion.
Give me some more dating advice. I'm loving this.
I just think that you've got this wired for sound anyhow, Derek. You're articulate. You're Nova bright. You're very intelligent.
You're super good.
You're movie star handsome.
Oh,
like
stop.
Grant.
We know that stuff. I need the real tips. Give me something I can use.
The tip is don't go to bars.
Okay.
Go to fun runs.
Fun
go
runs.
To Pork Fest.
Okay.
Go to
what's a
Liberty
fun
events.
Run? Is that something in the 90s too?
It may be from the 90s. And see, maybe my age is telling again. It's where you go on a 5 or 10 kilometer fun run. So what I used to do
when I was dating,
I used to go to nursing department fun runs.
Nursing department?
Yeah.
It's because that's the job sector you worked in?
It was not the job sector I worked in, but I found that there was a disproportionate amount of smart, good-looking women.
I see. All right. See, you're... You analyze the playing field and you're strategic
exactly.
about it.
Yeah,
see,
yeah.
I need to...
Because you have to have a vision.
I need to put more work into analyzing the field and being
you
strategic.
You have to articulate to yourself, who are you looking for? And you have to ask yourself, where are those people? And you go there.
I can't just fill out a form, do a saliva swab, and let the internet find my match for me?
You know what? Make that part of the pursuit.
All right. That'll just be a part of it. And I'll use all the factors. Plus, I'll put a crown of flowers in my beard. I'll grow out a beard and put flowers in there. That's the new
thing. As long as they're aromatic. What's your favorite flower, though, Derek?
I don't know if I have a favorite flower. I mean, I guess I'll be boring and say roses. I
love roses.
Yeah.
I love roses. Roses are very significant. Roses are very regal flowers.
They're significant.
Second only to orchids. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Orchids are also pretty, but too delicate. And you can't hold a bouquet of orchids.
You can't. And they're so exotic, though.
They're really
cool. But roses are good for every occasion. Again, it's permanent fashion, like Alan Flusser would tell us about, where you and I step out in a 30s or 40s vintage tux, and we get applause. We step
in
a 60s or 70s tux, and we get laughter.
Right. Or you hold a rose in your teeth, looks perfectly normal. Hold an orchid in your teeth, not the same
as
effect.
Long as you're doing a tango in the tuxedo with a rose in your teeth, and all the women swoon.
Yeah, that sounds nice. Yes. Have you ever been given roses? Can a girl give guys roses?
Yes, they can.
And
it doesn't happen very often.
Right. But were you ever given roses? Since you said you like them.
One time I was, but I'm also... my wife refers to me as a Vulcan, so...
A Vulcan?
I guess
that's a Star Trek thing, right?
It is. As a matter of fact, when we saw the new reimagining of Star Trek, I was sitting with my wife in the theater, and when Vulcan blew up, I whispered into her ear, and I went... Home.
I guess that's a Star Trek reference. Way over my head.
Indeed.
A lot of people love that show.
As I've said before, Star Trek is the fascist federation flitting about the universe, violating the Prime Directive every episode.
I have learned, so, like, Star Trek is similar to Star Wars in that it's got the similar plot of an empire, right? That they're opposing this empire.
It does.
So who's who's the empire in Star Trek?
The Federation is the empire.
Oh, I see. And are they with the main guys who we see on every episode? Are they with the Federation or are they against it?
Unfortunately, they're with it.
Oh,
they're
man.
They're collaborators.
Well, they'll never get a date, not with their saliva. They'll have to start putting flowers in their beards. It's the only way.
It's better than lice.
The Freedom Fiends will return with beards, flowers, and meow.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to The Freedom Fiends on the radio worms.
Should we use DNA to find our perfect mates? Should we leave it to chance? Maybe we should just mate with robots, get the whole thing over with. What do you think, Bill?
Well, I think you'd get less feedback if you mated with robots.
Yes.
Yeah, you probably could program them.
Less so that, instructive feedback.
You know, it's like the Stepford Wives. How interesting would that relationship be? It's like, would soap operas be interesting absent infidelity and indecision and people lying to each other? There'd be no soap opera if that were the case.
Well, mates have the potential to make one a better person.
And I agree with that, but they can't do it absent conflict. I'm convinced of that.
But robots could do it because they can see your potential and then tell you that you're not meeting your potential. It would be very much like a standard human mate.
Well, I have four words for you. Garbage in, garbage out.
So it would depend on the programmers, you think? You don't think we could get to the AI point where these robots are just as intelligent or more intelligent as we are? They don't need programming? You
know, I certainly think that's in the future, Derek, but I think that AI or expert programming even now is at the most fundamental infantile embryonic stages that there's no hope of what science fiction tells us in the immediate future of having anything like a sentient being that's made of metal.
Well, I'll just have to take your word and hope that I don't
have
a robot mate.
Don't take my word, and your audience shouldn't take my word. They should research it themselves.
Yeah, but I don't know if I'm going to have a robot mate sometime in the future. That might be a good thing.
Well,
they could make me a better person, and then I could.
You could have a robot mate now if you went to a sex store.
Well, it's not the same. I want my robot mate to be able to like be superhumanly super intelligent.
Sure.
So they don't have that yet. I want my robot mate to be smarter than me. Tell me how to be a better person. Hey, you know I want to leave us on a positive note. There's a young boy. Maybe you've heard about this story, Bill, out in Kansas. He came up with the idea to have a little free library in the front yard, and he built like what looked like a lemonade stand, but was more like a cabinet with glass front doors, so you could see that there were books inside. And he put some of the books that he had read and acquired at his little age 9, Spencer Collins, and he's got some chapter books in there, some picture books, things for all ages, and the city... In Kansas City, they told him he has to take it down because they have a rule against structures in the front yard. Can't have that. So he was upset. He told the local government at the city council meeting, please make an exemption for me. And the Leawood City Council unanimously approved a temporary moratorium that exempts the little lending libraries from a city ordinance prohibiting structures, and it's effective immediately. It will last until October. I think this is a win for the child. He gets a little bit of experience with local government, seeing what it's really like begging for his freedom, and then he actually got some. It actually worked for him.
Well, he got some crumbs left, but I just wrote an article recently about why virtue is the cornerstone of civilization and not law. And that's what this little boy is exhibiting. And, of course, what the city council is exhibiting is not largesse. They're simply saying, well, we're going to put a date time stamp on your freedom, but after that day, you will be subject to arrest or fining or caging or maiming or killing, depending on your level of resistance.
Wouldn't it be cool if this kid became a little peaceful resistor, though? I mean, he already got his permission slip from the government. What if he just let... I think his permission slip actually has a date of expiration of October 20th. So what if October 21st, or what if he decides to extend it all the way to Halloween? Like, hey, I'm going to put some scary Goosebumps books in here for the kids, and you don't have to return them until Halloween, because I'm going to leave this thing out here.
The only thing that bothers me about that is that there are plenty of thuggish police types out there who will be more than happy to give him a wood shampoo.
It's not going to happen. He'll be a peaceful resistor, and everything's going to turn up roses for him.
I hope so.
Well, humans, robots, DNA samples, we've got it all on Freedom Fiends. We'll be back tomorrow night with Michael Dean. Worms.
Annelids.
Meow.